I think we're at the point now where we've kind of learned where lipoxygenases fit into the overall formation of aroma compounds, at least to some extent. In the past, we've known that these branch chain, these compounds of produced by lipoxygenase are responsible for the formation, at least in this case, of things like aldehydes, but the way they fit into the ester formation wasn't entirely clear. The suspicion was that fatty acids or lipids were broken down to the release of these compounds, or formation of these compounds. So a little bit of background first before we get into the story, I suppose, and that is we'll talk a little bit about aroma formation. There are two different types of aroma formation. Thank you, Carolina, for this slide. You can smell fruits, right? As you walk into a grocery store, you smell strawberries and that sort of thing, so you have this orthonasal response, right? So you can pick it up as the fruit produce autonomously aroma compounds. And then you have induced aroma compounds. So as you consume a product, right, you can induce aroma compounds to be produced. And that, generally speaking, are large amounts of aldehydes and some alcohols as well. So we think about those two systems, autonomous as well as the cell disruption dependent pathways. And so by and large, the cell disruption dependent pathways are known to be synthesized via LOX pathway, so the lipoxygenase pathway. But we really don't know about its role in the autonomous ester formation. This is the pathway if you wanted to take a quick look at it, but basically what we're looking at are lipoxygenases that are classified as either 9-LOX or 13-LOX enzymes. So the 9-LOX splits the 18-carbon backbone of the lipid fatty acid into C9 alcohols is the final product, as well as some other polyunsaturated fatty acid products. The 13-LOX in this case then generates C6 alcohols, in specifically cis-3 hexenal as well as hexanol, hexenal and hexanol. And then those are suspected of being precursors, I suppose, for the formation of fruit esters through alcohol acyl transferase. So our goal was to increase our understanding on how aroma compounds, how these volatiles are produced in apples, and then the LOX's role specifically. So like I say, we know it's an important contributor to the formation of these aldehydes in apple, especially upon tissue disruption in apple and any other actually fresh tissue, as far as we know, in plant materials. So we investigated along four different lines to try to piece out its role in autonomous ester production. The products, we looked at the volatiles, we looked at the substrates, so the lipids and fatty acids, we looked at the genes, and then finally we looked at the proteins in this pathway. So to go back in time, actually, where this project initially started, it started out with Dave Dilley probably about 15, 20 years ago. Dave was responsible for building a library, an apple library, which he then put in a freezer and promptly forgot about. He never did use the darn thing, so I knew it was there. I started with a student from Japan, Nobuko Sugimoto, and we built this microarray, and with that microarray we began testing and evaluating different genes as they were changing over time throughout development. And one of those genes happened to be a lipoxygenase, and so we found this increase in lipoxygenase, and this was reported in 2008 but presented originally at the International Horticultural Congress in Korea. So this is the way it fits in, or the way we envisioned it fitting in here, that there was some kind of a lipoxygenase that increased. And it was interesting, only one of the lipoxygenases that we found in our microarray had increased. Subsequent to this, Stephen Ocker worked with Nobuko and I and one of his postdocs, Park. And they did a kind of express sequence tag analysis from published data sets and found that there was an increase in this lipoxygenase. Once again, we did the PCR to verify it, and this is the aroma compound production over time. So yeah, once again, another indication that there is at least one lipoxygenase that increases in concert with the formation of some of these esters. And following on that, Frank Dunneman and a group in Germany were working on linking some of these esters that are produced with certain regions of the chromosomes or the genome. And they used two different plant materials for their work. So they did this segregating population with Discovery and Prima. And then they found this region here near that LOX that we were talking about. And you'll find that we have a name for this LOX. It's MD LOX1A. And it was associated with a number of different esters here in Discovery, and then also associated with at least one ester here in Prima. The problem is that none of these are hexyl esters. So, you know, so we have an association with ester formation, great, but lipoxygenases don't make, for instance, butanol. They don't make acetate. They don't make allyl anisole. That being said, at least there's an association with ester formation. So, like I say, we may not have the full story, but we got part of the story here. So enter Carolina Contreras. So she began her work in 2008 and did some work with John Gold apple fruit and a series of experiments where we began looking at some of these precursors in a more serious way. So her work involved at least three different years, 2009, 2010. I think you also did it in 2011 in that analysis of fatty acids. So this is kind of the way we look at the biology. So these biology changes over time. There's an increase in ethylene production, increase in respiration, and that's the ester production right here. So Carolina chose eight time points to do the work in this case. Well, here we're talking about the LOX products. So those things that are produced by the lipoxygenase pathway. So here's hexanal, hexanol, which is kind of interesting. So we get this spike in hexanol, which is a product of alcohol dehydrogenase reaction with hexanal. And then the hexyl esters are being produced down here. So you can see there's a huge increase after this dotted line, which is marks the autocatalytic onset of ethylene production. Interestingly, the other products of the lipoxygenase reaction, so cis-3-hexanal, does not change, doesn't increase. No cis-3-hexanal, its product, which is a product of an isomerase, trans-2-hexanal, does not increase. And in fact, there are no esters produced from these compounds. So it's odd. How can you have lipoxygenase catalyzing a reaction? Lipoxygenase is a 13-LOX, wouldn't discriminate between the precursors for hexanal or the precursors, the fatty acids for hexanal production or the precursors for cis-3-hexanal. So we have a paradox on our hands. So we don't know how you can have these hexanal-derived esters, which would come from 18-2 fatty acids, and no increase in the 18-3-derived. So this is what the enzymes look, or the substrates would look like. Here is oleic acid 18-1 that generates no product via lipoxygenase. Hexanal comes from linoleic acid, and then linolenic acid, which is common and easily found in apples, produces cis-3-hexanal. We get copious quantities in consumed fruit as we eat the fruit, but not in autonomous esters. So Carolina did the work on fatty acid analysis with the help from John O'Rogie's lab at Michigan State. And Henrik Tilstrom was a very integral part of that. And she found this increase, this beautiful increase in free fatty acids. So take a look at the fatty acids we found. 18-1 and 18-2 increased with the onset of ripening, but no 18-3 increase. So this is why we see no cis-3-hexanal acetate, hexanal, butanoate, et cetera, no esters from the 18-3 fatty acids, but probably we're looking at these fatty acids as being precursors for the formation of all the hexyl esters that are produced in apple. So we're getting there here in the story. So there's 18-3 fatty, 2-free fatty acids are probably the substrate. There is no substrate for the 6-3-hexanal materials. And that this ester formation is probably via fatty acid biosynthesis. And this harkens back to some early work that Jin Song did some years back, suggesting that, yeah, we need to be talking about synthesis, not degradation, in terms of providing precursors for esters. So on to gene expression. So Carolina did some additional work characterizing those genes that are present. There are 22 lipoxygenases, or 23, depending on how you count, lipoxygenases in apple fruit. Of those, 17 are expressed in the fruit itself. So these is what they look like. So there are 13-LOX clade here, and then a 9-LOX group as well. And interestingly, the only one that increased, the only one we found that increased, is this LOX1A, and it's classified, at least it originally was classified, as a 9-LOX. And this is where the final story begins, I guess. So here, once again, are our classifications, our dates where we did the analysis. And what Carolina did was then look at the gene expression for all of these available or expressed lipoxygenase genes. And this is the only one up here that changed. So it's MD-LOX1A. All of the others were either stable or declined in one way or another. So a lot of them had declined. Most of them were relatively stable. So with the qPCR analysis, you see that the increase that we did find in this LOX1A was about a 100-fold increase throughout ripening. So it increased dramatically, whereas the others were either declining or undergo some kind of a modest increase here. And so unfortunately, though, we're looking at this and we're saying, okay, it's a 9-LOX. That doesn't mean anything. It's going to make a 9-carbon alcohol or aldehyde. Apples don't make 9-carbon aldehyde, so far as I know. However, there's a possibility that it could be a dual-role lipoxygenase, and so that's where We got involved with a group in Germany, so this is their work, actually. And so I couldn't present this last year because it was too early. We hadn't reached the publication stage, and now the paper has come out, so I can talk about it a little bit. So here's our LOX 1A, and then some of the other LOXes, which I won't talk about, but LOX 1A. And if you look at what its products are, it was annotated as a 9-LOX. It doesn't do much in the way of 9-lipoxygenase activity, but rather it was 13-LOX. So in other words, it makes hexanal or hexenal, depending on what the substrate is. So here we go. So what we find is that it's been misannotated in the literature, and that's because we don't understand enough about how the protein has its actual function. In addition, it's also non-chloroplastic. So if you think about tomato and the aroma compounds that a ripe tomato produce, it's been found that the aldehydes and whatnot that are coming from tomato are chloroplastic in origin. At least the enzymes are chloroplastic. But in apple, it looks to be the autonomous esters produced by, if it's produced by this little fella here, then it's non-chloroplastic. So here are our chloroplasts here. Here's the staining, and there's no cross staining for the for the enzyme, at least in tobacco. Anyway, I'll skip over that. So the group that in Germany, our colleagues in Germany, did an analysis or a model of the protein itself, and what they found was that there are a number of different residues or amino acids that are important for the activity of this enzyme. So they did some mutagenic analysis, and so those that are here in either orange or in blue were targeted for mutant analysis. The green compound here is our fatty acid embedded in its home pocket. The red sphere here is the iron at the core of the active site. So they did some analysis here where they did mutations. So here's an arginine made to an alanine. Anyway, yeah, so a glycine to an alanine here. And what we're seeing is that with those small modifications, they were able to switch this enzyme from a 13-lipoxygenase to a 9-lipoxygenase. So they had a pretty decent understanding now of what it takes to modify this. So this is the little guy right here, this little glycine here that was modified. So certainly it doesn't take much, but it looks like you can change its specificity one way or another, and you can also change its capacity to make one isomer or another as well. So that's basically the end of the story, I think, where we are with lipoxygenases. So only 6 of those 22 lipoxygenases have a significant change in expression. 3 were annotated as a 13-LOX, and 3 of those as 9-LOXs. The expression pattern of 2 of the candidates, decline in expression, similar to the cis-3-hexenal. That data is not shown, and that's not part of this story here because we're not talking about autonomous ester production. These would be induced in response to consumption of the fruit. Not lipoxygenase undergoing an increase is this LOX 1A. So it's annotated as a 9-LOX, but it's bifunctional actually. It carries out the 13-LOX and also a little bit of 9-LOX reaction in the apple. It's non-chloroplastic. And also in conjunction with what we've observed now in terms of the increase in 18-2 free fatty acids, very likely this is the guy that's responsible for the formation of compounds like hexyl acetate, which we know of as the green apple scent in apple fruit. So I think that's the story. So I have to thank the supporters for this. That includes a German group. So in the times past, I suppose, the Ag Bio Research at Michigan State University, Michigan Apple Committee, and Caroline herself was supported by Fulbright and Knesset in Chile. I think that's it for me.